You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois 62791.
This is the podcast for February 22nd, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside CPAC's Phyllis Schlafly kissing booth, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Come here and kiss me.
Come and kiss me.
No, but they will. You know they will.
Oh, of course they will.
It's like the Blarney Stone. You got to bend over backwards
all
and
right,
kiss it.
That's enough.
Yeah. You gotta bend over backwards and kiss
we're
it.
We're entering some really dangerous territory so early in the podcast. Well, we want to jump right in today because we have some long letters to read.
Yes, we do.
I mentioned in last week's podcast that we were getting some really wonderful letters about drone warfare and politics and what it means to be a liberal and on and on and on. And
yeah, which is all good stuff.
We got some more, and very grateful to all of you who wrote in with good or bad comments. And so we're going to read some of these today, and some of them are critical of us, and others are not. And also, we had a comment over at Crooks and Liars that I thought was a good cop.
Yeah.
The question was, you know, the president of the United States kills American citizens with a drone program that he only recently admitted existed.
Yep.
The first three words out of the Professional Left podcast, but the Republicans.
But the Republicans.
You know, I get that. That is really
funny.
That is really a good point.
Yeah. It's not, I would disagree with the 100% truth of it.
No, I think it's reasonable, though.
I know. I think it's reasonable. I think it's funny. More importantly, I think it's funny and right on point. And it's exactly the kind of sarcastic dig with truth buried on the inside that I appreciate, even when it's directed at me.
Yep.
And we're going
Speaking of directed at us.
Yeah.
Let me read a letter from Kevin. This is not our friend Kevin. This is a first time correspondent, I believe. Kevin in Maine.
Yes.
Calling us, writing us about our latest trend.
Our travesty.
Good evening. I listen to quite a few podcasts and listen to yours whenever possible. I have generally found you to be thoughtful and accurate. However, I am probably going to stop listening because I'm quite tired of being insulted recently. You see, I am a liberal who voted for Obama in the 2008 election, but decided to vote Green in the 2012 election. Half of your recent podcasts seem to be dedicated to telling me how ignorant and stupid I am because I just don't put my conscience away and blindly support President Obama. I know Driftglass has a thing about drones and how anyone that can't just ignore the deaths of children in our hands is just a moron. As hard as it is for me to ignore the drones, that is only one of the many problems I have. I majored in political science, and you could call me a political junkie. I pay close attention. I am under no illusion that Obama is even one-tenth as bad as McCain or Romney would have been. However, just because the Republicans are historically evil doesn't mean I have to make a Hobson's choice. If there is a person who I believe represents 95% of my opinions, like Jill Stein, why should I vote for someone who represents 50% of what I believe? Yes, I'm an ignorant fool who has problems with Obama. I have problems with him stacking his cabinet with Wall Street banksters. I have problems with his unwillingness to prosecute the people who wrecked our economy. I have problems with his constant caving to Republicans on every single issue. I have problems with his repeated insistence on a grand bargain, which includes cutting Social Security benefits, and his initial willingness to raise the Medicare eligibility age. I have problems with his insistence that he won't, under any circumstances, allow people with incomes above $250,000 to keep the Bush tax cuts and then giving in on the issue. I have problems with his refusal to consider a public option for Obamacare and his sweetheart deal with the drug companies to ban government negotiation for drug prices. I have problems with his saying that if the unions are under attack, he will get a pair of comfortable shoes and join them. Then he was almost completely silent when the shenanigans happened in Wisconsin. I have problems with his supporting and strengthening the government's ability to read our email and texts and tap our phones without warrant. I have problems with his insistence that he can hold Americans like Bradley Manning without trial in borderline torturous conditions. I have problems with his insistence that he can kill Americans without trial and without oversight. Those are just the things that roll out of my brain in the 5 minutes that I've been typing this email. I often hear people say we should follow FDR's admonition, make me do it. I don't understand this at all. What if your kid said, if you want me to behave, make me do it? Would that be acceptable to you? I don't think so. I voted for Obama.
Sorry, that's...
Yeah, that's the false thing. But anyway.
Yeah.
I voted for Obama because I had the insane notion that he was a good man who at least tried to do the right thing. That notion has long since passed. My problem isn't that he hasn't done stuff that is not politically possible. It is that he hasn't done the things he could do on his own, like fight for unions and stop privacy abuses. I'm not sure why Driftglass feels that it is a good business model to insult a large share of his audience. One frequent line of reasoning is totally off the deep end is that people don't blindly follow the Obama line, want to burn the MF-er down and start again. They don't care if millions die so long as they can follow their utopian dream of ideological purity. I ask you, who are these people? Is it me who won't support Obama for the reasons stated above? I can assure you that I don't want to see one person die, even guilty people. I repeat, who are these people? Please tell me. This is such a straw man argument that Driftglass uses over and over and over. I need to soften the tone a little in closing. I really think...
Remember, always play them out with pretty music.
I really think you are nice people who are well-meaning. Your love for your kids and desire to teach them the right thing really comes through in your podcast. I believe that I am the same way, and I do a ton of volunteering in my community in addition to my full-time job. I do, however, really feel insulted by the recent tone of your podcast. You seem to have gone from pointing out Republican hypocrisy and holding the media accountable to insulting a large percentage of your listeners. Perhaps you can understand that some of us can believe the president should be held responsible for his actions and policies without believing we are anarchist crazies who are so ideologically pure that we can't look past a quote-unquote few political differences. Thank you and best wishes, Kevin from Maine.
Well, thank you, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. And I think it's really hilarious that he thinks we have a business model, first of all. That's funny.
Or a plan.
Yeah. I did think, and you and I talked about this earlier today, you've been upset lately. Angry, I should say.
I would say so.
And angry at liberals. And you've been angry at liberals, and I think we haven't really examined what...
My anger? Let me get on the couch now, Blue. Yeah. See, it all began with my mother.
No, it didn't.
No.
As you and I were talking about it this morning, the anger that you had over the Ta-Nehisi Coates article and the 400 comments that he got about the war. And
I'm just jealous of him.
That's But yeah. I think one of the things that makes you really angry is not that people disagree with Obama, which I thought his laundry list of things that he's upset about.
Pretty accurate.
Yeah.
A couple of them I would have really severe quibbles with.
Yeah. And that would be another podcast.
A whole well, let me point out that has been other podcasts.
Yeah.
And there have been, you and I between us have written many, many posts about the various flaws and failings and shortcomings and how the fuck can't you see that the Republican Party is crazy? Why do you keep trying to compromise the people who hate you? Posts. Yep. So, and that is a thread that runs through most of the critiques, about probably a third roughly of the critiques that you and I have had, and certainly I've had of Obama has been his obsessive middle child, even though he's not, need to please David Brooks, pardon me breaking my Lenten promise, please centrist douchebags who hate him and will only ever be satisfied the minute he resigns and hands the keys over to, you know, John McCain or Sarah Palin and apologize for being black and an American.
Yeah.
And that's it. And those people run the Republican Party now. And
but I think the thing that has been making you really angry, and as we talked about it, I it sort of came to me that there's a big difference between people like Kevin, who are obviously really thoughtful, well-educated, and pay attention, and thread hijackers.
Yeah.
When we're talking about or writing a blog post or reading a blog post about pre-K education.
Yes.
And paying teachers a decent wage and having an education post.
Uh-huh.
And what a great idea it is to have more education at a younger age for everybody. and someone comes on a comment threads and says, but the drones, or too bad he's so great about education, but he's not so great about NDAA.
Right.
And it's
how can you pretend to care about children when Barack Obama sits in the White House every night and deliberately plans to kill children in other countries?
Yep.
Because you know that's what he does.
Yeah. And that and I think you and I have. Hello. I have a kitty here. Hold on a minute. Yeah, I know. Nice to see you too. All right. She wants her butt patted. Sorry about that.
It's okay. the pause that refreshes if you don't mind me saying so.
Yeah.
It's the threadjacking.
The threadjacking. And it's easy to blanket blame people who are talking about the same issue over and over again as being all of one piece. And they're not.
Well,
and thread hijackers are there no matter what the issue is. But the issue that's been coming up over and over again on thread hijacks is this one.
Yeah. And before this, it was healthcare.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was
single payer.
Sure.
Yeah.
I know that Lilly Ledbetter is a good thing and finally came out for gay rights, you know, because he's a son of a bitch. You should have led on this. But, you know, I can't take him seriously because he sold us out on healthcare. So fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And before that, it was, you know, 9/11 truthers. It was, you know, I don't mean to lump them all together, but there are people
who
just
they're not all lumped together at all.
No, but there are people who get locked into their one issue. And if you don't turn and this is where I'm going to take a little detour into the Washington Post to illustrate my point. Jennifer Rubin.
A thread hijacker, if ever there was one.
A thread jacker, a self-contained thread jacker. She is the fanatically pro-Likud. Israel can never do anything.
Pro-APAC, yeah, yeah.
Pro-APAC stooge on the Washington Post. And so the execrable Ramesh Panuru, who I have predicted will become a New York Times columnist, because even though he wrote The Party of Death and How Democrats Hate Babies and Other Things as his one book and is a lifelong Wingnut welfare recipient, he is gradually easing his way into that apostate conservative category where he will be welcomed with open arms by people who want to be reasonable and really, really want both sides to be wrong about everything. And if only we can find some reasonable conservatives without ever having to atone or explain all the bullshit that he used to get where he is now. He wrote a column saying, hey, basically conservatism has lost its mind. It's not 1980 anymore. And unless we get our shit together, we're doomed. And lightly critiqued the conservative movement in a way that, you know, is just straight up ripoff of liberal critique of conservatism since the 1980s. So, step one, Ramesh Panuru was right. Thank God someone's finally speaking the truth about domestic policy. And you know what? The same applies to foreign policy. And guess what? Israel. Boom. That fast we move from whatever the fuck we're talking about to her obsessive need to fetishize foreign policy, specifically West Bank Israeli policy. That's all she's interested in. That's all she's ever going to talk about. There's no shutting her up because she has her own column in the Washington Post. But whatever the topic is, it's 6 degrees of West Bank separation. Whatever the topic is, we're going to make it about Israel. We're going to fucking make it about Israel. Whatever the topic is, we're going to make it about drones. Whatever the topic is, we're going to make it about Barack Obama being worse than Hitler and just as bad as Bush. And you know what? That's fine. There's plenty of room for that dialogue in liberal conversation. But I would take a step back to Kevin. I don't want to convince Kevin of anything.
And that's not our responsibility. No. And I feel like Kevin is on the right track no matter what anyway.
He is.
I would like
him to think about.
I don't mean he's listening to us. I mean, he's just listening to the world. Yeah.
And I don't get paid by anybody. I don't have any axe to grind. I don't work for the Democratic Party. I have seen, however, as maybe he has, what happens when the not a dime's worth of difference people decide to vote for Ralph Nader.
Well, when I voted for Ralph Nader, I'm one of those people.
Yep.
And I did.
And I voted for Josh Anderson.
Mm-hmm. I felt as I was too young to vote for John Anderson.
Yeah. Well,
I was old enough to have breakfast with John Anderson many times. It was not. John Anderson was a guest professor at Brandeis when I was there. And to his credit, he ate in the cafeteria. And I joined him and he was very welcoming and nice guy and was one of the first people to. In in the whole world to find out that I had gotten into an Ivy League graduate program. So, because she was in the cafeteria when I got the letter. So
I voted for John Anderson because Jimmy Carter disappointed me so much. Yeah. So much. He was so not liberal enough.
Well, and Al Gore had a stick up his ass. So, and, I mean, Ronald Reagan. I was voting in Alabama. I keep saying that.
Well,
you know, you're allowed that leverage when you know which way things are going to go in your state. And
but if you stand, and again, I'm not trying to persuade anyone of anything other than to explain my thinking on the subject, if you care, which is, if you agree that, yeah, sure, Republicans are evil and they will destroy everything they touch if they get into office, but Barack Obama only gives me 50% of what I want, 40%. Why shouldn't I vote for someone who gives me 95% of what I want? That's a good point. Unless, of course, shifting your vote puts the people who are actually evil back into office.
Yeah.
In which case, you are voting to put bad people in charge of the government. Yeah. And that's
But you know that. And I think Kevin's right to say it's a straw man argument because he doesn't want to do that.
Right. Except that's the net result of your action. I mean, no one's trying to take your vote away or persuade you otherwise. But there is a very thin margin in most presidential elections, mm-hmm. or has been, and probably will be for some time to come. If you shift 500 or 600 or 1,000 votes in a key state from one column to the other guys win.
Well, and maybe we liberals need to focus 95% of our attention on abolishing the Electoral College and
that would be fine.
Doing proportional representation in Congress so that we actually get some Green Party House members. You know, I'd be for that.
I voted for Green Party members and libertarians local level, on the state and local level. I voted for Republicans on the state and local level because they were the best available candidates. I knew them personally. I thought they would do a fine job in what they were running for, and I voted for them. I don't have any problem with that.
If you vote in Alabama, most of the Republicans run unopposed.
I will never vote in Alabama, so that's not true. But as Tom Hartman makes this point very well, he said, look, at the state and local level, work your ass off for a better Democratic Party or something that can replace them, push them aside and be a better, more robust, true liberal party. But until that happens, please recognize with a cold, clear eye that when you vote against one person, you are voting in favor of another. Mm-hmm. It's a binary choice. I don't want it to be. I'd love to have a parliamentary system. We don't have that.
Not yet.
The whole idea, and I did go a bit over the line, but the whole idea of crashing the system and burning it to the ground is the second step in that syllogism. Mm-hmm. If you realize, if you understand that taking votes out of one column and putting them in the other, because those are the only two columns that are going to win, guarantees that genuinely awful people who have a genuine clear-eyed agenda that is absolutely antithetical to yours and hate you are going to take power, then you are voting to wreck the system. You're choosing to give power to people you know are terrible, who you know will be Bush on steroids.
But people with their eyes open, as Kevin has, are aware of that. And if they're voting in a state, he's in Maine, so I don't know exactly what the situation there is, but I assume he understands when he's voting Green Party that he's either supporting a Republican that might win or not, you know.
I don't know what the local circumstances are. Yeah. Again, I work like crazy on the state and local level. But to pretend that there is absolutely no difference between the administration of Al Gore and the administration of George Bush is crazy.
And I don't think Kevin is doing that, but I do understand there are some people saying that on comment threads.
Yes.
And it's wrong.
It's wrong. And
would you read the next letter? Yeah. I think you have letter number two.
Letter number two comes to us from a gentleman whose name I will not reveal.
Okay.
But he's a friend of ours, and he's a Facebook friend, and he's a
Facebook friend of mine, yeah.
He writes, Dear Drift Glass and Blue Gal, I found your comments on the moral dimension of drone use generally on target, but there's another you seem to have overlooked, that of strategic effectiveness. This is a very good point, by the way. I really this caused me to sit back and think. Mm-hmm. I say this from a background of some experience. It has been an unmitigated disaster. Begin by understanding that the kind of fight we are pointlessly engaged in from the Suez to Kashmir is fundamentally different from state-on-state warfare. A guerrilla general has both different motivations and an entirely different set of problems from his conventional war counterpart. Supply, movement, training, communications, etc., all function on an entirely different bandwidth and pace. And parenthetically from me, go read Sun Tzu. Go read The Art of War and you'll see exactly what he's talking about. The end result is that you can break a conventional army by shattering supply lines and command and control networks. To defeat guerrillas, you must convince them that they have, in fact, been defeated. Great point. Guerrilla war is essentially a PR exercise, and we have surrendered the airtime. This cannot be done by remote control, especially when dealing with a warrior culture like the Pashtun. It must be done up close and personal by squad and platoon, defeating them whenever they choose to fight. You cannot give 1 inch of ground, can never break contact no matter your mission, be willing to take as good as you get. Bombing, either by drone or manned aircraft at 10,000 feet, just makes people resentful and angry. I find it fascinating how shock and awe apparently works on everyone but us, whoever that is. Further, remote killing allows the enemy to claim whatever he likes about the event in question. Really good point.
Yeah.
When the Taliban claims our strike killed a wedding rather than a war party, we have no legitimate defense. We had no one there, no one on our side to bear witness, no close-up photographs, zilch. The sad thing is that everyone knows this, but we'd rather avoid casualties than, you know, win a war, even if it's a completely optional and pointless war. This is why we sent a SEAL to unit to get Osama bin Laden. There was no point if we could not verify the corpse.
Wow.
Like a ton of good points all packed into.
Have I mentioned how much I love our listeners?
All good points. Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Absolutely true. And I'm not going to go all Robert Heinlein on your ass.
Promise?
Yeah, no. No. But there's a bit from, God help me, I can't help remembering what I read when I was pre-adolescent. But. There's this bit in Starship Troopers where it's, you know, this is just how long the concept of push-button automatic warfare has been around. And I put a post up about Jules Verne's Master of the Skies, Master of the Air, whatever it was, which, you know, 1904.
You and I read that. You read that to me last week. Yeah.
And it's you know, this the whole concept of ruling the air has been around for a very, very long time. But Robert Heinlein makes the point about a futuristic war machine where you could just bomb the enemy from a distance. Said it doesn't work. You can crack their planet if you want to, but if you want to beat them, you have to put people on the ground who punch them in the nose, so to speak. You have to have people on the ground. You have to take their land away from them and convince them in a very intimate, personal way to stop fighting you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the point that this reader makes extremely well. Yeah. I don't think it's a particularly good policy to be bombing people by remote control for precisely those reasons.
Yeah.
It doesn't accomplish what you want to accomplish, which is getting the people to stop doing it.
Winning, yes. Yeah.
However, I this is why I should never be president.
You're right, Driftless. You should never be president.
Because if I were Truman and someone handed me a weapon and said, this will end the war in a week and it will save 1 million American lives. And in 20 years, people might think that it was a terrible decision and a massive disaster, and you might change world history. But this will end this grotesque, awful slaughter in a month and save countless lives and bring these people who will never surrender to their knees. I would do it. I would do it. And like Truman, I wouldn't have any second thoughts about it if I were him and living in that time, not me right now looking back on it going, good God, we let the hell of a genie out of a bottle. It's never going to go back. It is incredibly easy when someone hands you a new technological tool that lets you do what you think you should do with very little consequences in American blood and treasure to use it. It's extremely tempting. I would love to hear a debate about why this is screwing up our PR campaign.
Yeah.
And also,
I think those of us that care about this, and I'm one of them, and I've been considering this, perhaps some of us should write to Barack Obama and talk about how he's hurting the cause.
Yeah.
By doing this. That, you know, if he wants Action for America or Organize for Action or whatever he's calling it to be a success, it's going to take a lot more than $500,000 fundraisers. It's going to take us liberals deciding to buy in.
Yeah.
And he's hurting that by continuing to accept that it's perfectly okay to consolidate executive power. over and over and over again.
And if we have, and this is one of the things I give George H.W. Bush credit for.
Yeah.
Even though I still think it was a terribly bad idea to tell Saddam Hussein it was perfectly okay to invade Kuwait and then attack him when he did, because that's what we did. And perfectly, it was a terrible idea to arm the shit out of him and then say, where did he get all these weapons?
Yeah.
George H.W. Bush at least made the case for doing exactly what he proposed to do. He did it in public. He did it in front of Congress. There was a big old national debate. And then the winning side got to do what it wanted. He didn't lie us into a war. He didn't trick us into a war.
He had an exit strategy. He didn't march to Baghdad.
Exactly. Yep. And his exit strategy was, I'll go this far and no further. Yep. And all the people who criticized Bill Clinton, including his son and Tom DeLay and people like that, were all about what sort of idiot would go to war without an exit strategy. What sort of fool? We're going to be in a quagmire in Kosovo for another 20 years. People who were perfectly content to let George Bush do whatever he wanted were horrified that Bill Clinton was going to go to war. Now, here's the question, and I don't know the answer to it. This is the point. I really don't know. And it's so far above my pay grade, I don't even know who to ask. If we have entered a phase of warfare where you are stuck with killing individual people or individual groups all over the wherever, if that's really and truly where we're at, then we should talk about that. Mm-hmm. If the nature of warfare has changed forever and so profoundly that that's the kind of war we're going to fight, if we're going to fight urban, horrible urban combat, whenever we go to war, it's going to be awful and there's going to be a lot of civilian casualties because the people are spread out all over the place with lots of weapons and lots of human shields. And they're stuck in neighborhoods and they're tucked away in schools. If that's the nature of warfare now, we should know about that.
Yep.
And we should understand the consequences of what our choices are. Mm-hmm. But that's, again, that's not a conversation we're having. Yep. And we should. Anyway, thank you, reader. That was a really good letter.
Yeah, thank you very much. We got another letter from one of our ex-military listeners, and we want to say shout out to them. Mm-hmm. Ex-military, active military, whatever.
We're considering
glad you're listening. Mm-hmm. Dear Driftglass and Bluegal, drone warfare is the perfect operational doctrine for the kind of war we are trying to fight, as opposed to the war we are actually in. My strategic collections team spent most of its time chasing IEDs, rather than upper-tier commanders.
Yeah.
And in another capacity, I had more than one colonel tell me that his number one goal was to bring everyone home. I'm assuming, as I think we all can, that this guy was in Iraq.
Or Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His number one goal was to bring everyone home. Uh-huh. It became clear to me fairly early that the command structure had dismissed on any concept of victory. And we're simply going through the motions, waiting out the CINC. I don't know what that is.
CNC, Commander-in-Chief.
Oh, Commander-in-Chief. Oh, okay. Thank you. Yeah. CNC, Commander-in-Chief, and minimizing the body count until we were all rotated home.
Yep.
This infuriated me at the time, but in retrospect, I see the wisdom. Everyone wanted to get Saddam and Osama bin Laden. No one outside the Bush cadre had the slightest interest in what followed.
Yeah.
No one will say it, but I have come to believe that our generals threw this war, threw it, and they were right to do so. Very interesting.
Yeah. And
very,
it's
very, very interesting. I'd love to hear from more ex-military listeners comment on that one way or another.
Yeah, because yes. I still have, direct memory, although I was a bit of a child at the time of Vietnam, and exactly the same arguments.
Yeah.
And we had boots on the ground everywhere, and we had all kinds of advanced technology, but we could never quite figure out what the hell victory was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And we could never quite figure out how to get ourselves out of there. I agree with Ezra Klein. Declare victory and go home.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's the right answer. Let me put it this way. I would like that to be the right answer. Mm-hmm. I sincerely would like that to be the right answer. I don't know if it is because I don't know enough about what I'm talking about to form an opinion about the kind of war we're supposed to be fighting. If this is inevitable, if there are many alternatives that we're not even hearing about. But again, if low-level urban terrorist guerrilla warfare is what the 21st century looks like, then we better get ready for it and we better get used to it. And if that's the future, then that's the future. And if there's something we can do to mitigate that, that's great. But I don't hear a whole lot of conversation about how we cope with that, or how we figure out how to fight those wars if we're going to be forced to, or how do we figure out, how do we avoid them if they're avoidable? Anyway.
Very good. Well, you have one more letter to read.
I do. This is from a reader named David.
Hi, David.
Dear Fran, Blue Gal, pseudonym, etc. I wrote you briefly a while ago. Continue to enjoy your podcast and how it challenges my sort of liberal, sort of idealist views. As Driftglass would somewhat uncharitably say, burn the system to the ground.
Oh, he's one of those people. We love you, David.
Yeah. Not writing to bitch, but, quote, but the drones or anything. But if y'all haven't seen this article about drones and their increasing presence in pop art, it's kind of interesting.
And it is very interesting. And I will post that on our Facebook page.
Anywho, hope you guys are doing well. I have a job again at 25% pay reduction from my previous one. And as St. Krugman would point out, as a young guy, this pay reduction will probably follow me my whole life. But once I get past the 3-month introductory review period, can set up a monthly donation for y'all. Yay!
And be careful about that. When you're able to afford a latte for yourself, buy one for us. That's the rule.
That's it. But if you're looking at the rent and going, how am I going to pay this?
Yeah. Don't send us anything.
Don't send us anything. Yeah.
This podcast is our gift to you. Okay.
Like I said, I'm still a sort of radical against the establishment type, parentheses. I suppose I'd prefer Cornel West's or Noam Chomsky's critiques on the whole American governance to y'all's. No offense. No offense taken.
Cornel West. I wish he was Secretary of State.
I have severe problems with Cornel West, but...
I just love how crazy he... I mean, I don't mean crazy in a bad way. I'm not going to get into the weeds of his actual, what he stands for.
Yeah. I'm glad there's a Cornel West that exists,
and I love watching him. And
what he was doing in the Matrix movies, I have no idea.
He was in the Matrix movies, wasn't he?
And Noam Chomsky wasn't, so ha ha ha.
Suck on that, Noam Chomsky. Look where this podcast gets us. Okay, continue with the letter, please.
But your routinely challenging and well thought out, and at least to me, valuable viewpoint, and yeah... still my liberal brothers and sisters in arms or votes or whatever.
My brothers.
Yeah. And he trails off. David. Thanks, David. I appreciate that.
David, we do appreciate that. And I wanted to end this podcast on a friendly note, the letters section anyway.
Yeah.
And David gets it. And I love how he sees his position and ours and says, my brothers and sisters.
Yeah.
Well, you all are. And that's...
it's a family fight.
That's what grown-ups do. Yeah. There's a lot of pissing matches going on in common threads, and that's not where any of us really need to be doing pissing matches.
No. If you ever visit my site, and really you should, you will notice that I never censor my commenters. My policy is taken almost directly from Steve Gilliard, which is I run a bar. And occasionally the bar gets rowdy. And that's just how bars get. And occasionally I have to throw some son of a bitch out. And that's how bars go. But barring that, it's pretty open. I will publish almost anything anybody has to say. Oh, the other thing is, this is where I had to put up a CAPTCHA thing. I had to start looking at every comment because somebody got awful frisky with my identity.
Oh, yeah.
And decided to be kind of funny to try
to figure out who you were.
Who knew me.
Yeah.
And decided it'd be kind of funny to publish that. Yeah. And I didn't take that very kindly. Yeah. That's transgressive. And hey, if you want to open up your own Driftglass blog and bomb the shit out of me, that's fine. But that one also didn't make it through the comments section.
you are giving up on David Brooks for Lent as you did last year.
I am. I want to say, first of all, subtlety is not fun.
No, it's not.
And it's a drag. And it is... It's something I struggle with because other than, as you point out, malaria policy and AIDS in Africa, pretty much everything George Bush did was terrible. Mm-hmm. His entire policy portfolio just sucked from judicial appointments to letting cities drown to Terry Schiavo, you name it. Whatever the fuck his policy was, it was bad. It was bad across the board. So fuck Bush was easy.
Yeah.
You know, you could just hate everything to do with George Bush, because pretty much everything he was doing was terrible. Now we're back to a much more normal situation, in my opinion, where the person in the White House does some stuff you like, some stuff you hate, some stuff you think why can't he just add 50% to that? Why can't he just see the logic of moving from insurance-centric healthcare to single-payer healthcare? What the hell is wrong with him that he can't do that? You start having these fights where you are, you know, you have permanent interests, not permanent allies.
Would you speak for a moment to the Joan Walsh column that was out this week about trust?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was a wonderful column. It's linked over at my place, but it's a Joan Walsh column. I just put in the last three or four paragraphs because it was on drones, but it was on race. And it was on people who are ethnically white, people who are ethnically black people. It's a very long and complicated
column. Her book is about that, and it's worth a read. Yeah, her book is really worth reading. Yeah.
But it's about, it boils down to, I trust Barack Obama more than I trust George Bush.
Yeah.
And is that wrong?
And it's like the commenter over at Pammy Atlas's place who said to me, I trust George Bush more than I trust Barack Obama.
Yeah.
And this is when it comes down to, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. The problem is the concentration of power with the executive, Congress not doing their job.
Yeah.
And we have a warlord running our foreign policy. No matter who's in the White House, that's what happens. And then he gets to pardon everybody who...
At the end.
At the end, yeah.
Final act, you get to pardon everybody. And you could construct an executive authority in the United States that was completely transparent and force every president, whether they're good or bad, left or right, whatever, to be 100% completely transparent all the time. You could put a webcam on the Secret Service detail and watch every single thing the President of the United States does all the time. And that would solve the problem. You would never be in doubt as to what the president thought about drone strikes because you would watch him make the decision in real time. That is a solution. You could certainly solve the problem of executive secrecy by simply stripping the executive branch of all ability to have secrets. And structurally, you can rebuild the government if you want to make sure the executive branch has very little power and very little ability to keep secrets. You couldn't run a government that way.
No.
But the minute you let executives, the minute you let elite people have privacy, be able to make decisions away from their constituents behind a closed door and say, trust me, you open the door to the possibility that trust will be abused. What I took away from the Joan Walsh article was this. Is it okay to think that there's certain things of executive power that I simply do not trust George Bush to do and do trust Barack Obama to do?
Mm-hmm.
Part of me says, no, you should have a perfect apparatus, a perfect government that always prevents secrecy, that always prevents abuse of power, that is impervious to abuse by anyone, except that's never going to happen. And so are there things that the chief executive of the United States can do that if that person is of good conscience and a good public servant, they will not abuse that privilege? And if they are of bad conscience and are out to wreck the country or enrich their friends or roll in a fascist and or theocratic agenda, will abuse? And I say, yeah. You know, we have a pretty weird balance in this country where we're having all of these pangs of conscience on the left about every time Barack Obama appears to overstep his bounds. Nobody's impeached him. Nobody's talked about impeaching him. Nobody has said he's done anything illegal. There's no scandal in this administration. But we get very queasy, and rightly so, when the president does things that we think are abuses of power or don't go far enough or aren't what he should be doing. We've lived through the impeachment of one president by another party for what was essentially trivia. We've lived through an administration that committed war crimes, really, really committed war crimes. Barack Obama never lied us into a war. Barack Obama never did any of the actual criminal things to precipitate a war that the Bush administration did. He inherited a lot of stuff and he's abused some of that authority, but he didn't create this ball, this thing rolling downhill. And nobody from the Bush administration went to jail for any of this.
Right.
They all, in fact, most of the people in the media who helped them with the lies got promoted.
Well, so, and I have an example of that that I wanted to share with you. I haven't shared this with you earlier because I came across it late in the day today. Politico has an article that came out yesterday about how the Obama administration is staging their media puppet master and they're staging leaks and they're doing friendly interviews and they're staging photo ops and they're doing all kinds of things to try to manipulate the media.
Yeah, golly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're using social media.
Oh my God.
So it's like steroids. It's like they're doing it on steroids. Okay. So this media person named John Cook, who is at John J. Cook on Twitter, got really mad about this article. Jim Vandehei and Mike Allen wrote this article.
At Politico?
At Politico. And John Cook.
Tiger beat on the Potomac? At Tip Charlie Pierce.
At Tip Charlie Pierce. John J. Cook, at John J. Cook, said on Twitter, I will now tweet every question that Politico's Mike Allen asked President George W. Bush during a May 2008 interview. And there are four of them here that are screenshotted here.
Yeah.
Mr. President, I know you're going to hate this, but I'm hoping that we may twist your arm and talk about baseball for just a moment.
Yeah.
Question two. Mr. President, you haven't been golfing in recent years. Is that related to Iraq?
Is that because you love America too much? Yeah.
This is the guy who wrote the article about Obama.
Yeah.
Being all, you know, manipulative of the media.
I remember Reagan op-eds entitled, I think, Why Is This Man So Popular?
Yeah. I can ask you one quick political question, Mr. President.
Yeah.
You have a clear eye. I wonder at this point if you feel sorry for Senator Clinton.
Yeah.
And finally, all right, Mr. President, who does a better impression, Will Ferrell of you or Dana Carvey of your father?
You know, and now we're into
the hard hitting journalism of Politico.
And now we're into Jeff Gannon territory.
There you go.
Again, another impeachable offense. Here's a gay male prostitute who sat 100 feet.
A fake name and a big security risk. Yeah.
And he just disappeared and nobody ever asked. There were a few questions raised, but nobody asked any questions. So the point being, and this is a point that Bill Maher raised, and it's the asymmetry of our politics. We have very high standards that we think presidents should live up to on the left.
Yeah.
And we get very pissed when our guy lets us down. And we get very upset when that happens. But during the Jeff, go look up Jeff Gannon. It is hilarious. If you are not familiar with the story of Jeff Gannon, you will not believe the story of Jeff Gannon because it's the stuff of bad pulp fiction. Yeah. And suffice it to say, a gay male hooker.
Yeah. Who was advertising sexual favors on the internet.
Yes. Military style.
Yeah.
And under an assumed name became part of the White House press corps. And he was the guy.
Access to Karl Rove and everything.
Yeah.
Being in the press conferences at the White House.
Yeah. Stories were leaked to him. And when the question got a little too heated, they'd throw a question to Jeff Gannon, who would say, considering what obstructionist assholes Democrats are, how do you expect to do all the good things you're going to try to do? Well, that's a good question there, Jeff. Except his name wasn't Jeff Gannon. It was James Guckert. And it was an assumed name. So this guy got past Secret Service, got past the FBI, sat there for a couple of years. And
we had security clearance apparently from Karl Rove to be in the White House. So
the question, because the only person who raised this as an issue was Bill Maher.
Yeah.
The media wouldn't fucking touch it. People who sat 10 feet from this guy would not write a story about it. They refused to do it. And the question Bill Maher had was, if this had happened in the Clinton White House, don't you think the reaction would have involved pitchforks and torches?
Yep.
So here's the thing. I have lived through the impeachment of a center-right Republican who happened to be a Democrat by a fluke of geography named Bill Clinton because he had a D after his name.
Yeah.
They impeached him. They ran him out of fucking town, and they impeached him. And then I've seen people, the same people, lie back and applaud a war criminal. And then I saw the same people turn right around and pull the same shit on Barack Obama before he was even inaugurated.
Yep.
I am disinclined to pretend that the two sides, the two political halves of this country are the same.
Or that you're getting 50% of what you want out of the Democrat.
Yes.
And 95% out of someone else. So you're going to go that way. I agree. It's just not.
And I am more inclined to trust the party that doesn't impeach its opponents with a little more power than
even when they should.
Yeah, even when they should. I am more inclined to trust the party that does not alternately applaud war crimes and then impeach their opponents and rig elections. I don't trust those people with as much power as I do trust my
suppressing the vote, too.
And I'm sorry, but that's there is a difference. There is the two sides are simply not symmetrical. There are gross problems with the Democratic Party, and our reader Kevin articulated a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're simply not mirror opposites of each other. And
I do want to get back to that. Why don't I vote for someone who will give me 95% of what I want? And the reason is because if everybody did that, you get 0% of what you want.
Yeah. I wrote a little caustic thing years and years ago, which was, here's my plan. I'll take my 10 votes and you give me your 30 million votes, and then I'll have 30 million and 10 votes, and then I'll win. If that's your plan, then your plan has got flaws in it that maybe you should examine. Again, build from the ground up, state, local, municipal, terrific. But if your master strategy is, I'm not going to support people who can give me some of what I want and allow the people who are going to wreck my country in as a result, then I've gone down that road and I didn't like where it took me. That's all I'll say.
Yep.
So speaking of roads not traveled, I promised this Lenten season not to write about David Brooks.
Yep.
And I have kept my promise.
And we're not going to podcast too much about David Brooks because you're not going to write about David Brooks. So.
No. No, but
and it really does clear your palate. I don't think you would have written about Jennifer Rubin this week if you had written about David Brooks.
Probably not. And a few other sort of technical notes. I will be guest writing over at First Draft next week.
All right.
Guest blogging over there. I promised Athena over there that I would create an ugly public feud
with some other liberal blogger.
I'm trying to get every really opinionated A-level.
Oh yeah,
bloggers to all hate me simultaneously.
Cool.
So I'm trying to figure the right issue to piss them all off at once, and have them crash down on me simultaneously, which is actually the plot of a Harlan Ellison story.
I'm sure it is. Everyone, take another drink.
Yeah.
All right.
You know, he doesn't write science fiction.
And we have another note. A note about the internet kitties. I did want to let people know because we've had some letters about this recently. A couple of our internet kitties that we've had in the past have sadly passed away. And we want everyone to know that we never discuss on the podcast anymore whether a kitty is still on this plane of existence or not.
Yes.
We got some emails from listeners who were very distraught that this was becoming the dead cat show. Yeah. And we have cats in our house that are alive, and we have cats in our backyard who are no longer on this plane.
Yeah.
And I just have to say that the approach of this podcast is that an internet kitty belongs to eternity.
Yes.
So we will leave it at that. And this week's internet kitty is very much alive. He's 3 years old. His name is Tibber. And like many of our internet kitties, he likes to sit near or even on a computer keyboard. What the hell? You can send us your internet kitty as we run an internet kitty at our Facebook and website every week. Send it to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. As you can tell, we love hearing from you, even if you are angry. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service. Go postal. we rural juror.
Okay. Rural juror. Rural juror. I was born on a pirate ship.
What was your tongue twister the other day? Purple papal stapler?
to properly staple purple papers requires a proper purple papal paper stapler.
Very good.
Hello. Yes, I never thought I would ever use that one again. And then the Pope quit, and suddenly all my old posts are everything old is new again.
And by the way, I mean, while we're off topic, there's a wonderful song by Miren Cadell, C-A-D-E-L-L, called The Pope. And you can... I don't think it's on YouTube, but I think it's on Spotify. And you Google it and see if you can find it. It's hilarious. It's, you got your Pope penance buttons, your Pope clothes, you got your Pope binoculars to see him up close. And I cried when I saw that man in white. Very funny song. Very, very funny song. All right.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the Pope of
the
Roman Church or the Pope of Meet the Press, which
who is John McCain.
John McCain.
I knew it.
who was angry.
Exclusive. He was exclusive.
Exclusively on Meet the Press. Exclusively.
Listen, feel free to write us.
Yeah.
Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service Go Postal Union letter on the air, unless you say otherwise. Hey, Drickless, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are convinced someone is wrong on the Internet.
Let's think about living. Think about living. Let's think about loving. Think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.